Nice to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, my mother used to tell me I was kind of a jumpy kid, and my mother used to say, "You have ants in your pants." And I never had ants in my pants, but we did have some pests in our pantry once in a while. Maybe you've had pests in your pantry, some insect pests, and we're here to help today. PJ Leash back with us once again. He is the manager of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab, has degrees in biological sciences and entomology, and we'll hear about those insects that hang around in your kitchen area. He'll also talk about some other bug issues that came up. I've got a question about marmorated stink bugs or a comment about them. What about you? Give a call with your insect question at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. PJ, welcome back.
Pleasure to be here, Larry.
Yeah, good to have you back again. Well, what types of bugs are we likely to see in our pantry or kitchen, and how common are they?
Well, overall, they can be really common, and there is quite a long list of various small moths, things like Indian meal moths. There's a long list of beetles. A couple dozen different kinds of beetles can show up in kitchen areas associated with food items. There are a number of small flies that can show up indoors. Mm-hmm. If you have some spilled garbage or some gunk building up in the drain or the garbage disposal, certain insects can breed in there. And these are amongst some of the commonest insects I get at the diagnostic lab.
Yeah.
Everyone at one point or another is going to bump into one of these. Sometimes it's just a bad box of something you bought at the grocery store and the insects are already in there, and over time they kind of trickle out. In other cases, it might be something where the insects sneak in during the warmer months and then they kind of find good conditions and set up shop.
Hang around there. And then in terms of getting rid of them, I suppose if you find something in a box, you can get rid of the box or maybe freeze it if you want to hang on to the material.
Right, yeah. For all these common pantry pests, the management basically boils down to the same steps, and it basically boils down to sanitation. We really don't have to spray pesticides for these things. You got to find the source, and sometimes it takes quite a while. You got to do some detective work to figure out the source or sources. Sometimes it's not just one box, it might be multiple. So don't stop looking through the pantry items. If you find one infest item, there could be more. But we find those items, we discard them, or as you just mentioned, in some cases we can freeze them. Maybe it's insects that got into, say, a bag of pet treats.
Yeah.
And the dog won't necessarily mind that much, and so we can freeze it, kill the insects, and then keep those treats. If it's human food, most folks tend to freeze it and or discard it entirely.
I remember back in my earlier bachelor days, I roomed with a guy, Kurt Westbrook, and he had a dog, and we had these flies suddenly around, and sure enough, there was something going on in the dog food.
Yep. Another thing that can be really helpful is just in terms of prevention, if you keep food items sealed in snug containers, Tupperware with lids, if you just have, say, bulk grain sitting in a brown paper bag, there's a possibility insects can get in. We know they can get in through some of these materials, but if you got it in a nice, good, sturdy Tupperware, it's almost impossible for insects to get in there.
What insects are coming out right about now? All the time.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain ones that are around all the time. We have some overwintering insects that I've been getting more and more reports of recently. It's getting to that point in the spring where it's warm enough. We're seeing some insects that overwintered as adults starting to fly around. I've seen just driving around in the last couple of weeks, a few things out there flying, and a couple small moths or flies at night around the porch light. So there's a number of things starting to become active. Probably the commonest thing I've been getting reports of lately has been an insect that has been mentioned on the show a number of times, this brown marmorated stink bug that been sneaking into people's homes. Lots of reports of that one in the last few weeks.
I had a guest on the show recently who was telling me about the marmorated stink bugs in her house, and she has one of these doors that where the dogs can run in and out, and she's got a few dogs, and she literally had thousands of them. She started turning them up, and they were even to the point they were behind the photos on the walls and the paintings, and it was a real mess. She had to literally take everything out of the house.
Yeah, so luckily in Wisconsin, I haven't heard reports quite to that extent yet.
But this was in Janesville.
In Janesville, okay. The worst reports I've heard in the state have been in Madison area and south of there, Beloit and Janesville. If you go out east, though, where this particular stink bug has been around for a lot longer, since the 1990s, it's not uncommon to have thousands of stink bugs in your houses out there. Within the last week or two, there was actually an article in the New Yorker that described this couple living in the southeastern states. They had about 26,000 stink bugs, they estimated, living in their house. So that could be what we have in store for us at some point. We don't know.
Well, it may have happened in Janesville, at least to one person, and you know they're so bad because you have to be careful getting them out, or they release a terrible smell.
Yeah, I've had just a few of them in our place in Middleton. What I tend to do is grab them with a paper towel or a napkin, because I have grabbed them with my bare hands, and they release that scent. It sticks on your skin. You can wash your hand with soap and water 2-3 times. It's still lingering there. So they're just an unpleasant insect to deal with.
Donna in Escanaba, Michigan has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Donna. Thank you for calling. Oh, let's see. Did I get you on, Donna? Are you there?
There.
There you go. What's on your mind?
All right. I left, a grape was left out on my counter. And in the morning, it was like half eaten, you know, just like the skin was still there, but eaten on the inside. And then last night, I had half a banana. It was cut in half, but the peeling was still on it. And then that, the end of that was eaten out. But I don't see any insects. Does that sound like an insect would do that?
Well, not quite, especially this time of the year. There's not that many insects active indoors, and it's pretty dry indoors this time of the year. I would wonder more about small mammals like mice or something like that.
Mouse. Ooh.
Yeah, you might have a mouse.
Would it eat just like half of the inside of a grape, though? Would they do that?
Well, hard to tell for sure. I mean, it just doesn't sound consistent with insects, though. The insects we'd have around associated with fruit, I mean, things like fruit flies and things like that are so darn small, they wouldn't be able to eat much. It would take them days and days to eat the amount that disappeared.
I'm thinking of ants or something, but no.
Yeah, I mean, ants could be a possibility, but usually ants forage, and they often go on these trails that they lay down, and you would definitely be seeing some kind of ant activity around.
Okay.
All right, get out the mouse traps. Thanks a lot for calling, Donna. Appreciate your call. Jimmy in Cudahy, your turn. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, I got a light that goes on when it gets dark out, and it's like one of the big streetlight ones. And it's by my garage, and I'm about a half mile from the lake. And all summer, I had an infestation with spiders, like hundreds of them. And I was wondering if there's anything I can do to prevent that. I am switching out the light to a motion light, though. So is there any help, please?
Yeah.
Yeah, in a case
they're
like this...
They're there for a reason.
Yeah, Larry just mentioned the spiders are there for a reason. They're eating insects. You mentioned you're near the lake, so you're going to have a lot of insects around. I've handled cases along these lines where in Milwaukee, or you have some big, tall, you know, 10, 12-story buildings with spiders all over the place, and it's just a matter of your location. You're in a good spot. There's lots of food, so the spiders do well. In terms of keeping them off, there's not going to be a whole lot that you can do. One thing we would do in industrial-type situations where we have insects getting into warehouses and things like that, one trick is to move the light rather than having it on the building. Put the light somewhere away from the building on a post, because then that will draw the insect, kind of pull them away from the building, rather than if you've got the light right on the side of a building or garage, you're drawing them to that. And if you're drawing insects there, the spiders are smart. They're just going to sit there because they know that food's coming to them.
Yeah.
Right. So I was going to switch it to a motion. You think that would it'll be mounted to the garage, but you think that'll help a lot?
That may help to a certain extent. It would depend on how frequently that light is going on. If it's, you know, clicking on very regularly and you're still drawing insects, then I would suspect you'd probably still have some spiders setting up shop in that location.
But if it's, right. you know, but if it's once or twice a night, maybe that it pops on.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, Larry. If that light really isn't going on that frequently, and I know you can usually adjust the settings on there, if it's just going on once or twice a night and not being triggered that often, then you won't necessarily be drawing in as many insects, and that might help. So I think it would help compared to a light that's always going to be on at night.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Jimmy. Good luck. Peter in Tucson, Arizona. Your turn. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Recently moved from Wisconsin to Tucson, but I can't give up WPR.
Well, good for you.
Show. but I'm having a problem now that relates specifically to this, is that at our indoor kitchen composter have, you know, serious issues with fruit flies. And, you know, we've tried the trick with putting a plate of vinegar out with some soap in it, and all that does is stink up the kitchen and doesn't catch many flies. So wondering if there are great solutions to fruit flies in an area where fruit is prevalent, and so it's easy to have that kind of waste in our kitchen composter, which is important because that's our kind of our waste station for taking things to our outdoor composter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, my general thought along the lines of fruit flies is we try not to target the adults because that's really kind of a temporary fix to the problem. We want to get at the source. And fruit flies and several other small flies, they like damp, decaying organic material, which is basically what a little compost bin is. Now, to go from the egg stage to the adult fruit flies, if it's nice and warm, it might take about a week or so. So what you could try doing is increase how frequently you take that indoor compost and send it outdoors. If you are changing that out every few days and those insects don't have a chance to complete their life cycle, that should kind of break things up in terms of their life cycle and cut down the reproduction in there. But also taking a close look in just general sanitation in that area, if there is anything that has spilled outside of the compost bin, little bits of damp organic food material that gets into cracks and crevices can breed a surprising number of fruit flies. So I think it basically boils down to cleaning things up, keeping things as tidy as possible, and trying to change out that compost frequently.
There we go.
I'm afraid that we end up bringing in a lot of the flies because we have quite a number of citrus trees, and so we're, you know, frequently harvesting and bringing in the citrus, and no doubt there's some that have maybe a little puncture hole in them or something, and they're, you know, they, so the fruit flies are being brought right into the house, so that's kind of a challenge. You don't know until you bring the fruit in, and all mm-hmm. of a sudden fruit flies start crawling out of the fruit itself.
Yeah. If you suspect that it might be coming in on fruit, what you could do is when you pick the citrus, bring it indoors and try and keep it in a colder location. Most insects, if you get them down below about 50 degrees, that really slows them down or arrests their development. So if you can keep the citrus in, say, the refrigerator, then that would prevent them from emerging from those types of materials.
Mm. Good idea.
Yeah, good. Thanks a lot. Good luck out there, Peter.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye. And more callers online. By the way, you can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the world of insects today with our guest, P.J. Leash, who heads the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Great to have him along. And we have lots of callers online, so I think we'll go right back to the phones to Andrew in Menasha. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some issues when it gets warmer out with spiders coming into my house. They live in the corners of the ceiling, and they spin these little cocoons. And I've tried everything to get rid of them, and they pop up all the time when it gets warm out. No issues when it's cold, but I know we had a warm spurt not too long ago, and then I got a few of them in the house.
Yeah. I used to live where I lived on Lake Monona. That was a pretty regular occurrence in our house, PJ.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when you look at the spiders we've got in Wisconsin, the Great Lakes region, we've got about 500 or so species. And if you looked at that list of spiders, it's really a pretty small chunk of the species that can do well and thrive and survive indoors. Then we've got other spiders that will on occasion sneak in accidentally, more during the warm portions of the year, because they're really outdoor spiders and they come in through a basement window well and that sort of thing. In general, when it comes to spiders indoors, though, spiders are predators for the most part. They're really pretty harmless to people and they don't go out of their way to bite people. But if you've got lots of spiders around, that tells me they've got food to be feeding on. So you've probably got some other insects around. If you're in maybe an older house, you know, poke around in the basement, or you find in dead pill bugs and other things that maybe have snuck in from outdoors. If you're finding things like that, that tells me there's maybe some cracks or gaps somewhere around a basement window well, in the foundation, around windows or doors that don't seal up the best. And that may be how their food is getting in or how the spiders themselves are getting in. Now, once indoors, and for the spiders that can live indoors, in general, they don't reproduce that quickly. Maybe a generation or two per year. It's going to vary, of course, by species. But with them not reproducing that quickly, if we go around every once in a while and do a thorough vacuuming, take that vacuum hose and suck up in the corners of the rooms, that will physically remove some of them. In places like basements, you know, in your back furnace room, I'm a pretty big fan of what we call glue board traps, which are a plastic or cardstock tray, and they're just covered with really sticky glue, and they sell them at hardware stores, usually near the mouse traps. They're pretty inexpensive, so you can put out a whole bunch of them, and those are just passive traps. So the spiders or insects walk on it, they contact the glue, they get stuck, and that's going to be the end of them. And so that can help kind of siphon some of these spiders off the population. And as I mentioned, they don't really reproduce all that quickly. So those are two things that can be really helpful. There are also some indoor insecticides that can work against certain spiders. Those are best for, say, cracks and crevices in basements, just those dark areas where spiders sometimes like to hide out. And that can offer some residual protection as well. So usually with throw vacuuming, those glue board traps, using insecticides indoors if needed, that can really help with the spider situation.
There we go. All right. Thank you very much for calling. And let's turn to Kay in Madison next. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I can go for months without any little tiny red ants, but lately they've been marching into my cat soft food. I put out some ant traps that I got from the hardware store, but I can't tell that it really helped. So I'm just wondering if you have a better idea for the little tiny red ants.
Might have been a problem with the trap itself.
Yeah, that's what I suspect, Larry. So it turns out with all our indoor ants, there's maybe 12, 15 or so common species in our area. And you can kind of split them down the middle in terms of their taste preferences. Some ants love sugars and sweet things. Other ants like more protein-based foods. Now, in this case, with the ants going to things like cat food, I suspect...
That's a protein-based.
Yeah, they're after the protein. So with that said, if you go to the hardware store and you just pick up a little bottle of liquid ant bait, that often tends to be a sugar-based bait. So if you put that out, the ants pretty much ignore it, and it's not going to work. So what I would suggest is going back to the hardware store, maybe pick up a couple of different baits, and sometimes it'll say on there, you know, designed for fat or protein foraging ants. And often what we do is we try a couple different baits, and we find one that they really love, and you'll see the ants going to it, and they'll recruit more workers from their nest. We find the bait that they like. We keep putting it out because they'll take more and more of it back to the nest. Sometimes they'll actually consume all the bait in one trap. We got to refresh it, put more out. Once we find the bait that works, we kind of hammer it home with that, and eventually that should help take care of the problem for you.
There we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And moving on to Tom in Madison. Hi, Tom. Whoop, we lost Tom. Let's go to Sherwin in Elgin. Illinois. Hi, Sherwin.
Hi, how are you doing? Great for your call. I've got a problem with an ant, and it's not a large ant. It's a medium size. It's not the little puny ones.
Yeah.
And when you crush them, they smell like lemons.
Mm-hmm.
Like a musty lemon. And I'm wondering, they seem to be along the foundation, and they get into the house.
Yep.
And they all have wings.
Okay. I was just going to ask if they have wings on them. So
they all do.
What it sounds like you're bumping into, we have an ant species we call the citronella ant. Because if you squish them, they have this citronella lemony smell to them, and that's actually a key feature we can use to identify them. Now, the story with these is they are soil-dwelling ants, and they actually can live several feet below ground in some cases, and they will live in association with certain aphids and live off the honeydew of those aphids. Now, what happens is at certain times of the year, and I often get lots of calls in February and March and early April. The ants are nesting below the foundation of a house, and the foundation has kept that soil warm enough. The ants think it's May or June or July because the soil is warmer than what they're used to. They, for a period of several days or maybe a week, you get a bunch of these winged ants. They kind of disappear on their own because they don't have good conditions to live indoors. They don't just live in our houses for the most part. So with this, you kind of just let things run its course. They're going to disappear and diet on their own. If you've got lots of them, I would suggest maybe vacuuming them up. And within a week or so, I would expect them to disappear. With the winged ants, they're really not interested in baits. They are trying to mate and reproduce and start new colonies. So there's not really a whole lot we can do about these other than just wait a little bit of time, and I would expect them to quiet down on their own.
So it's just a digest, a period of time, and then they just go on their way.
Yep.
Yeah, because they are getting in the house, and they fly about 3 to 4 feet, and then they fall down, you know. And
yep.
Yeah. They don't fly like birds, so.
No.
No. So.
Citronella ants.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Sherwin. Let's see. Arlene and Jackson, it's your turn. Hi, Arlene.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I just have a recipe for getting rid of fruit flies and drain flies that's non-toxic.
Okay.
This has worked for years for me. A teaspoon of lemon-scented dish detergent.
Yep.
A fourth a cup of cider vinegar. And 2 cups of water. It really works.
So you just pour, you pour it over the...
No. I put it in a glass jar and just set it on the counter.
And they come and land on it, and that's
they
the end of it.
They come and go right in it and die.
So now people are saying, well, wait a minute, what was that again? You got, tell us the formula again, Arlene.
1 teaspoon of lemon dish detergent.
Okay.
A fourth a cup of cider vinegar.
Okay.
And 2 cups of water.
2 cups of water, okay.
And if you want, you can cut that recipe in half, then you don't have that much in the jar, but that works really well.
All right. I've got it down. Thank you, Arlene.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. By the way, you can join in, too. We have some open lines again, finally, and the number is 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Dana in Fitchburg next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I wanted to ask something about house centipedes. Where do they hide in the house? I occasionally come once a year over one centipede crawling on the wall. Do they prey on other insects? Do they bite humans?
Sure. So the centipedes, I think of them somewhat similarly to the indoor spiders we spoke about a few minutes ago. Centipedes aren't spiders. They're in their own group, but they kind of do the same thing. So centipedes themselves are predators of insects around the house. They can be really fairly common. If you find one or two a year, I'd say most folks in the state probably fall into that category. If you're finding one or two a day, then I would, say that might point to a larger issue going on. But in general, they're really very common. They will feed on things. They're pretty harmless to people. In theory, they do have some venom fangs. If you were to pick them up with your bare hand or mishandle them, they could bite in theory. I don't know of anyone that's actually been bitten by these. It could happen, though, if you pick them up. But really, they're going to be pretty harmful. Their general defense, if you turn on the light and disturb them, their defense is to run and scurry away very quickly, which is why I think a lot of folks aren't very fond of centipedes, because they run away very, very quickly from you. If you are concerned about them, we would do the same kind of tactics we would do with the indoor spiders, vacuuming them up. If you see them, they like to hide in dark nooks and crannies, in basements and in areas like that that really don't get disturbed by people. And also those glue board traps can work pretty well for these. I've got some glue board traps out in our basement. I catch these from time to time. And like the indoor spiders, the centipedes don't reproduce very quickly. You might get a generation or two per year. So if we are using these glue board traps and kind of siphoning them off the population, that'll help keep them in check in the long run, too.
There you go, Dana. Thank you so much for calling. And let's go to Don in Platteville next. Don, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about, in our backyard, we have a couple of block walls that are up. We have rocks, different types of granite rocks in there, and then plants are there. But on the statues that are in there, I noticed, especially the white ones, there's little bitty red, I don't know if they're spiders or mites. Someone thought maybe they were a mite once. And I was just wondering if it would be dangerous to, like, pets or people or anything like that.
Yeah, so a couple of mites can pop up outdoors that can be really pretty common. One of the commonest things I see are these red mites we call velvet mites, and they're really not a concern for people. I see them on our back deck and around our little fire pit, brick fire pit in the backyard, and they're really just not much of an issue. We can also get something called clover mites that can be associated with plants. Clover mites can be a little bit more of a nuisance because sometimes at certain times of year, the clover mites will wander from a lawn or planted area and get indoors. Once they get in, they're harmless. They won't bite you. They just kind of crawl around. For either of these, if you were really concerned about them, you could almost just go out and spray them with a little bit of soapy water mixture. If you used about an ounce or two of dish soap per gallon of water, that's a formula I often use. That would take care of them. Otherwise, when I see them in my backyard, I tend to just ignore them because they're not really hurting anything.
Yeah, that's what we've been doing. But they're really like a bright red color, so I just kind of made me wonder what they were. So thank you.
With the bright red color, I suspect something called a velvet mite, and there are some that can really be pretty good size as far as mites go.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Don. And let's turn to Cassie in Waukesha next. Hi, Cassie.
Hi. So we are having a problem, I believe, with either red flower beetles or confused flower beetles. And I had originally found them in a bag of sugar about 8 months ago, which I threw out. And I've been storing all of our new flour, sugar, things like that in closed containers. And I put out pheromone traps, but I keep finding bugs when I sweep or when I wipe off the counters or in the cupboards.
Okay. Well, in a case like this, I would say it could be helpful if you were to collect a few of these and send them into my lab for identification. The reason for that, there's red flower beetles and there's a closely related species, that confused flower beetle. Red flower beetles can fly, the confused flower beetle can't.
Okay.
So if we know the difference, if it's one species and they can't fly, they're walking to where you're finding them. The other species could be at a source potentially a little bit farther away, and they might be flying to the area that you're finding them. So that could be an important clue. In general, though, if we've got red or confused flower beetles, they've got to be in some type of food source somewhere. So it sounds like you've gone through and sealed things up well in bags or Tupperware. It wouldn't hurt to check those again. If you had any spilled flour or any other materials that got into cracks and crevices in the cabinet, that could be a potential food reservoir for them. So you got to almost empty the pantry and vacuum really thoroughly. They can also get into other food materials like crackers and chips and things like that. So I would kind of expand your search from the, you know, just milled flour and look at other items in your pantry, because if you're still finding them wandering around, I suspect there's another food source that they are taking advantage of. And until we find that, we'll probably still have problems with them.
Okay, thank you. Is it worth spraying? I'm a little nervous about spraying.
I wouldn't spray.
Yeah, with these pantry pests in general, in most cases, I would say you don't have to spray, because if you do enough detective work, you find the source or sources and clean those up or get rid of them, that's going to put an end to the problem.
Okay, great. Right. Thank you so much.
Yep, sure. Thanks so much for calling. And you can join in too, 800-642-1234. On to Tamara in Oshkosh. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind today?
Definitely. So I recently moved to Oshkosh and with my boyfriend from Milwaukee, and he has a problem with box elder bugs. And last year we tried to use dish water, like dish soap and water, to get rid of them, but they've lasted all winter long, and I'm just not really sure how to get rid of them.
Yeah.
There is an old fence next door to us that they seem to just thrive on in the summer months. I mean, there were hundreds of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the winter came, and they seemed to go away up until maybe about a month ago, and they're more frequently coming into the house and in the cabinets.
Yeah, they were probably already there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
so
what I'm thinking.
The story with these box elder bugs, they go through about two generations per year outdoors, and they're really plant feeders. So inside, they're not feeding on anything. They're not reproducing indoors. During the warmer part of the year, they'll live on box elder trees, which are technically a type of maple, and other things like silver maples and a few other trees. So they're associated with plants outdoors. In the fall, they start looking for a sheltered overwintering spot. And they'll come up to buildings and sneak in through cracks and crevices. The ultimate solution, sometime this summer, if you take a close peek at the outside of the building, look for cracks and crevices, and they don't have to be very big because these insects aren't huge. But if we could physically seal up those access points with caulk or expanding insulation foam or some other means, that should physically keep them out. Now, if you are in, you know, a 100-year-old farmhouse and that's not feasible, there's too many nooks and crannies, what we can do in those cases is we'll take a residual insecticide and spray those same areas along edges of foundations and window and door frames, these weak points where they might be getting in, and those products repel and also kill the insects. So we try and prevent them from getting in. I suspect in your case they probably snuck in already, and they were probably in a wall void or soffit area. When it was cold, it was too cold for them to be active. But in the last couple of weeks, it's warmed up, and they have moved into the living quarters, which is really a dead-end for them. It's too dry. They don't have food. They're going to die because
they should have gone the other way.
Exactly. They want to sneak outdoors once it gets warm.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Yep. Sure.
All right. Thanks for calling. And let's turn to Dan in New Glarus next. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I've got a problem with, they look like they're regular house flies, about a centimeter long, black flies, and they are just infesting our kitchen. We're sucking up hundreds of them with the vacuum cleaner. Not quite yet. They'll come out here again probably when it gets a little bit warmer out, but on real warm days in the winter, they did pop back out again. So from what I'm hearing so far, suggest that we've got some sort of a food source that they're finding. Is that what you would say?
Well, in this case, I'm actually thinking along slightly different lines. There is a creature out there called a cluster fly that is an outdoor parasite of earthworms, but they like to sneak indoors like box elder bugs, looking for a sheltered spot to spend the winter. And so they'll hunker down in wall voids and soffit areas. This time of the year when things start warming up, they can become active. They're going to be about the same size as house flies, but if you got them under a good magnifier lens or under a microscope, it looks like they're wearing a yellow sweater. The middle of their body is covered with these yellow hairs. This would be basically managed the same way as the box elder bugs. We try and prevent them from sneaking in. what happens when they do get in, they become active sometimes in large numbers. They often hang out around windows and things like that. I would suspect something more along those lines. What I would do in your case, Dan, is maybe collect some of these or snap some pictures if you can and send them to me at the diagnostic lab at UW-Madison. We can figure out for sure what they are, and if they are indeed cluster flies, I can send you some more information on what to do about them.
Would they, if you had, a dead mouse or something, would they, in the wall, would the cluster fly cluster around something like that?
Not something like that. If you did have a dead rodent in the wall void, though, you can get a number of other flies that would pop up. I'm thinking of the blowflies, which tend to be a very metallic green or blue color, very shiny. Those, once you recognize them, they're kind of hard to miss. But given the time of the year, I'm really suspicious of these cluster flies. If you live in a rural area, there is another fly, a slightly different name, but it has almost the same pattern, but we see it more in rural areas.
Okay. Can I ask all the callers who want to get rid of their spiders to just send them over to me?
Maybe
my wife wouldn't like that.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I was thinking back to, I had some turkey wings that I saved from a wild turkey that I shot, and I had those wings out in my garage, and in the fall I had a bunch of blowflies out there on those wings. I was kind of letting them dry out, but they didn't dry fast enough. Let's go to Al in Madison next. Hi, Al.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Last summer, I've got a couple of dwarf apple trees, and last summer I went outside and there were these beetles all over. They ate all the leaves. I tried using a soap mix, didn't deter them. I ended up using 7. It looked like they were Japanese beetles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm wondering, I killed a lot of them. They were all over my yard, in my garden. I killed a lot of them with that 7, but what's the chances they're going to come back this year in mass?
Probably pretty good. We won't know for sure the levels we'll see. Now, last year was unique because I had reports of very high pressure kind of throughout the state, and if you look at the weather the last few years, we had 2 very mild winters that I think might have bumped their populations up. We just had a pretty cold winter again. I'm hoping that may knock them down to a certain extent. We won't know for sure until July once they pop out, though. But I had lots and lots of reports of Japanese beetles last year.
And they can come in from a long ways off. That's the thing.
Yeah.
If you kill the ones on your lawn, they can just fly right in from somewhere else, too.
Well, I had read that they like to lay their eggs and burrow down in a tilled garden, tilled areas. I have quite a large garden. Is there something I can put on there to destroy the larvae when they come up?
In theory, there are some products that you can use to kill the grubs. Now, the thing is with Japanese beetle grubs, I don't think of them so much as being in the garden. The females, though, love low-cut irrigated turf grass, so lawns are probably a key source. But as Larry mentioned a moment ago, they can fly long distances. So if you go and, in theory, kill all the grubs in your lawn, you could have more fly in from a half mile down the road. So that usually doesn't work. I get lots of questions, can I kill the grubs so I don't have the adult beetles? And unfortunately, it doesn't work that way.
Oh.
Okay.
There you go, Al. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. P.J. Leash, Patrick Leash, with degrees in biological sciences and entomology from UW-Madison, manages the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the insects that you might be finding in your home or outside around the edges of your home or maybe in your lawn or garden. Our guest today, P.J. Leash from the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Great to have him along. Lots of callers online. In fact, our lines are all filled. The number is 800-642-1234. Let's see if we can get somebody on the air here with their question. Irene in Lakewood, we'll go to you. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Hi, thank you for taking my call. We think we have carpenter ants. We've had them about 2 months. Now, normally in the past, we would only get ants in the summer. We put ant traps up, and that was fine, and they were, you know, they were under control. We've tried one poison. We're now trying just another one, but we can't find. Our friend suggested they're looking. They have some moist wood that they're thriving on, but we can't find anywhere where they could be doing that. The house is only 1972, so it's not that old.
And you're seeing them where?
Mainly in the kitchen.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, in general,
if
they are indeed carpenter ants, which tend to be black, although there are some brownish species, they tend to be amongst our larger ants. So if they're good size, that's a strong clue you've got carpenter ants. In terms of
their
biology.
They're larger than the other ones we usually see.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, in general with carpenter ants, they are often associated with damp wood, and there's often a misconception, and folks mix them up a little bit with termites. Termites can actually eat the wood, and they've got microbes that help them digest it. Carpenter ants don't eat wood. What they will do is go to pre-existing damp pockets of wood and kind of excavate that and tunnel it out to use it as a nesting site. Indoors, though, they can also nest on occasion in some other locations, sometimes in wall voids, or I've also encountered them in the foam board insulation beneath the siding of a house. If you think of that pink or blue foam, it's about the same density as rotting wood, so they sometimes like that as a nesting location. Another clue, if you happen to have a wood-burning fireplace, sometimes folks will bring in firewood, it sits there too long, carpenter ants that are in the wood can become active. That's an easy fix. You take the wood back out somewhere cold. What I would do, though, with carpenter ants, to help you potentially narrow down where a nest is, with carpenter ants, we can sit there and watch them and watch where the workers are coming from and going to and kind of triangulate back and figure out where a nest might be in this section of wall here. If you know of any potential water issues in a kitchen associated with sink or dishwasher or something like that, that can be a strong clue to investigate further. If we can find the nest directly, say it was behind a dishwasher that had a slow leak, and we can pull it out and find the nest, they're not that hard to treat and eliminate. A problem with carpenter ants, though, is they are sometimes in these locations we just can't get to, in a wall void somewhere or a soffit area we can't get to. There are some insecticides that the professional pest control folks have available that work very, very well, but they're really not available to the general public. There are also some baits specifically formulated for carpenter ants, and carpenter ants can be kind of picky with what they like to feed on, and if you just pick up some stuff from the hardware store, in most cases, those baits don't work very well. But if you hop online, you can find a couple of carpenter ant baits that are specific for carpenter ants that will work much better, so you could always give that a shot as well.
Yeah. Are there some product names that you can think of off the top
of
your head?
Trying to think of some. Some of the websites I can think of that have these types of products, if you Google search like a do your own pest control or do my own pest control, there are things like Advanced Carpenter Ant Bait and similar types of baits. Advanced 375, I believe, is another one. They tend to have the name Carpenter Ant in the name, or it's going to mention it on the container directly, and those are the types of bait products we're looking for. Rather than a liquid-type bait, they tend to be a dry granule or little pellets. And those baits, again, are formulated specifically for carpenter ants, so they tend to work much better.
Okay, well, I appreciate your suggestion.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. And let's move to Wendy in St. Croix Falls next. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. I have a mystery bug. I have a 100% wool wool rug in a bedroom, and every time I go up to vacuum, I notice there's new little tunnels or holes in the rug. We have ladybugs, but is there another kind of bug that eats wool?
Sure. So there's actually a couple that I can think of. My top suspects in this case would be some of what we call our clothing moths or clothes moths. And they're these tiny little caterpillars, maybe about a quarter of an inch long, so they're not very big. And they will feed on things like wool rugs. Now, typically, they don't like wool rugs that are out in the open, a sunny room that's used frequently. They like rugs that are tucked away or wool garments that are tucked away in storage for longer periods of time. But those would be my top suspects. You'd have to get down on your hands and knees and really take a close look for any little caterpillars on the rug. And some of these can be hard to spot. What they will do is make little silken webbing tunnels to hide in, or they can actually make little cases that they live in. We've got two different species. One of them is the case-making clothes moth. They will make a little cocoon case to hide in that's made out of the same fibers from that rug, so it's going to blend in pretty well. So you really got to do some fine detective work to figure out if they are there. That's what I suspect. There's also a few other insects, like certain carpet beetles can nibble on wool. But the clothing moths would be my top suspect. If you do have those, there are certain insecticides that can be used on carpeting. But one really important thing would be to do very, very regular vacuuming and just physically remove those. That can be an important step to eliminating them as well.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much for calling. And Jake in McFarland, your turn. Hi, Jake.
Hi, thank you. Every late winter, early spring, I get these tiny little black and brown hard-shelled bugs that are about the quarter of a size of a piece of rice, a grain of rice.
Yeah.
And they're only in my dining and kitchen room area, and I'll find usually about 10 a day. I'll find them on the ceiling, on the wall, and on the floor, sometimes in the middle of the floor and sometimes near the base of the cupboards. They don't bother me. They just reappear for a few months every year. And I don't know if they're coming out of the wall. I don't know if they're coming out of the recessed lighting. I don't know if they're coming out of the cabinets. But it's just something where daily I end up taking the dustbuster to about a half dozen or so of them.
Sure. What I would do in this case, I'd really encourage you to collect a few of those and send them to me at the diagnostic lab. With the small size, it's probably going to be tough to get a good picture of them. I can think of a couple tiny things that pop up during the winter months. Outdoors, we've got some dark species of springtails. If it were those, I would expect if you looked outside on the snow and things like that, you'd have a bunch of them out there too. There could also be, because you mentioned your kitchen kind of dining area, another possibility might be some of these tiny beetles associated with food items. So that could be a possibility as well. But again, if you can collect some of them and send them to me at the diagnostic lab, that would be helpful. We can figure out exactly what they are, and then I can tell you how to get rid of them. If you would like to send in a sample, one of the best things to do is collect them, put them in a little hard-bodied container so they don't get squished when they go through the mail.
Old pill container or something.
Yeah, pill container. Old folks got away from film, but the old film canisters worked well. Small Tupperware, small mason jar, anything like that to protect them. And then you can send it to me at the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab at 1630 Linden Drive in Madison, Wisconsin. And the zip code is 53706. So again, that's 1630 Linden Drive in Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
All right.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jake. And Sherry in Whitewater, hello. What's on your mind?
Good morning. This is in response to the man who called with the Japanese beetle problem.
Yeah.
Probably 5 or 6 years ago, I had a zillion of them because I put one of those pheromone traps out, and I called them from all over the city, apparently. After that, I bought some neem oil and some, I'm going blank right now. The bacteria that you, the Milky Spore bacteria comes in a really fine powder, and I put the Milky Spore down in the summer and fall whenever I found them around all my roses and my couple of ornamental trees and stuff like that. And then the next spring, I watched for them,
And any juveniles that came up, I mixed like a tablespoon of neem oil in a gallon of water and drenched the soil where I knew they would most likely emerge. And I've done that for the last couple of years. And I was surprised to hear you say, Larry, that last year was a banner year for them because I had the fewest I've had. The milky spore bacteria moves into the larva when they're in the soil, and it devours them from the inside, and it doesn't hurt anything else. And once it runs out of grubs to feed on, it goes away. So the combination of those two things, drenching the soil when I start to see the adults emerge with neem oil, and it's you just need a little bit, a tablespoon in a gallon, but in combination with applying that milky spore for a couple of years has made a huge difference.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so there are a number of ways to go about battling Japanese beetles. It really depends a lot on kind of the landscape around you, too, because in theory, you can get rid of all the grubs and more can fly in. There's other things we can use to target the adults. So with Japanese beetles, you kind of have to pick your battles based on the types of plants you've got and the ones they're feeding on.
And we can talk some more about Sherry. Thanks a lot for calling. We'll talk some more about Japanese beetles, maybe a little bit more about their lives. We'll talk about your life, too. Stay with us. We'll be back right after the news. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at the world of insects today with P.J. Leash, who heads up the Insect Diagnostic Lab at the UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller, and really appreciate you joining in today. If you have a question about an insect that may be bugging you, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Christina in Glenwood up next. Christina, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thank you. I have two questions.
Okay.
The first, about a week and a half ago, I saw a big black carpenter ant in my house. Should I look for others to prevent issues?
Yeah, I guess a question for you. Do you have a wood-burning fireplace?
No.
Okay.
Okay. A couple things could be going on. I asked about the fireplace because sometimes folks bring in firewood that's got a few carpenter ants with it, and they wander away, and that's not really much of a concern. I'm a little suspicious that you should do some more detective work and keep an eye out for any more. What could happen is if you had a carpenter ant's nesting in a location like a wall void, during the winter months when that wall void is too cold, you don't have much activity, and then right about this time of the year, things start warming up just enough, you start seeing a trickle of activity, and you might see an occasional ant or two. If there were a nest in a situation like that, I would expect as things continue to warm up, you'd probably see more ant activity. So in your situation, I'd probably keep an eye out for any additional carpenter ants around your house.
All righty, thank you for that.
Yep.
And the other question. Now, guys, I love receiving cards in the mail, and apparently ants do too, because every single year, my mailbox is loaded with little ants, and I have to put those little ant baits in there. And last year, I had to put it in there twice. What's up with that?
Well, hard to tell for sure. I mean, there are a number of ants that live primarily outdoors, and they just like to find sheltered locations to set up a nest. And they can move in. They'll almost move an entire nest there, and so all of a sudden you got a whole bunch of ants. If that's the case and they're just in your mailbox, it may be hard to kind of prevent them outright. But if you can see them readily in there and spray them with soapy water or wipe them out with paper towel, they shouldn't really be that hard to eliminate. One thing you could potentially try, if you just seem to see them every single year, and if they are migrating into the mailbox from somewhere else, you can get something called tanglefoot, which we use for trees. It's a sticky trap barrier. You could maybe put a little on the post leading up to your mailbox, and if ants are trying to climb up there, they would get stuck on that. It is kind of messy, sticky
stuff.
Don't
get it on your hands.
Yeah, but you could try that. I would maybe put down a layer of tape first, like duct tape, so that you're not putting the Tangafoot right on the wooden post for your mailbox. But you could try that and see if that stops the ants from getting up there this year.
Okay, great. Thank you for that.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Mimi in Reedsburg emailed to ask if those bright red mites could be chiggers.
Well, there are mites out there called chiggers. They're really a juvenile stage of a certain type of mite. Typically with chiggers, though, we don't encounter them all that frequently in Wisconsin. You go to warmer climates, they're much more common. I think of chiggers in heavily vegetated areas, out in the woods, brambly areas and places like that, and not out in the open on brick patios, yeah, those types of locations. So I don't suspect that those would be chiggers.
Elias emailed to ask if the plug-in insect repellents work.
Yeah, so there's a number of products I've seen out there, these little devices that you supposedly plug them in and they emit a certain noise frequency, and the thought is that's going to scare away insects or spiders and things like that. And I've looked at studies that have researched these, and I've never seen any results that showed they actually worked. So yeah. I don't put a whole lot of faith into those.
Let's go to Virginia and McGuanago next. Virginia, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hey, I have a question about whether or not it would be safe to introduce a natural predator like praying mantis into my garden to help control Japanese beetles, and now we're finding some of those invasive stink bug things that are coming up too.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are companies out there that sell praying mantids that you can, in theory, release. They're technically species that aren't native to Wisconsin that have kind of been introduced to the U.S. for some time. If you release these, they're probably not going to solve the problems to very great extent. The reason for that, if you release them as an egg case, what often happens is the egg case may have 100 or more individuals that hatch out. And those will sometimes eat each other. They can be cannibalistic. So all of a sudden you go from 100 down to, you know, you get two or three adults out of the batch. But also they can be fairly mobile. And so if you're releasing larger adults, they aren't necessarily going to stick around your garden. So you can spend a lot of money to get these. And in the long run, they're probably not going to eat that many things in your garden along the lines of Japanese beetles. I have seen pictures of them eating stink bugs and Japanese beetles, so they, of course, can feed on those, but they're not specialists. They will feed on pretty much any insect they can get their legs onto.
Hmm.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for calling. You know, I should have asked Virginia what she was trying to protect. You know, sometimes, depending on, say you've got some grapes, a little stand of grapes, you could maybe use some floating row covers. Can they work?
Yeah. I mean, with every plant, you kind of have to pick and choose your battles. And it depends what type of insect you're trying to prevent damage from. If it's something like grapes and your concern is Japanese beetles, floating row covers certainly can work for that. They can work against other pests as well. So there are some non-chemical things. There are also some other beneficial insects that you can purchase from various companies. If I were going to try one, I would maybe try lace wings, which are a neat little creature. And you can buy the eggs, and the eggs hatch into larvae. And the larvae of lace wings will feed on things like aphids and small caterpillars, soft-bodied insects like that. And then because they don't have wings as larvae, they can't fly away and leave your garden on you. So that might help you out a little bit. Another thing, just in general, we know from a lot of research, the more diversity you have in your garden and in your backyard and the landscape around you, more diversity, you're going to encourage more of these beneficial insects. So if you've got a vegetable garden, maybe try planting some strips of flowers nearby, and that will encourage beneficial predatory insects, be it lace wings, lady beetles, maybe even praying mantids, parasitic flies and wasps and things like that. So having more diversity, you get some neat plants in there as well, but it can also help control some of your pests.
Let's take another call. Arlene and Rhinelander, your turn now. Hi, Arlene. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I occasionally have seen some kind of bug come in, and in the fall I think it's from when I bring plants in, but then I I've seen them again once or twice this winter. It's, I would say, about an inch and a half long, maybe grayish, with a lot of legs on each side. And when I take it up with a Kleenex and tromp on it, it gives off an odor, I would say, kind of like a crushed vegetation-type odor, very strong.
And what is its shape?
Well, it's kind of long and narrow, with maybe inch and a half, and it's got a lot of legs on each side.
Okay.
Well, given your location in the state, up in Rhinelander, I don't think it's our stink bug that we're having major issues with down here in the southern part of the state. We do have a somewhat similar-looking insect. It generally is consistent with your description. It's called a western conifer seed bug. And they are associated with pine trees and other conifer trees. They actually feed on the seed cones of those trees. And like Asian lady beetles and box elder bugs, these western conifer seed bugs like to sneak indoors in the fall. Usually not in huge numbers, but you get one here, one there. They do have scent glands, and so if you disturb them or crush them, they release this scent, and basically it will remind you of some of the chemicals from the plant. So I suspect that's probably what you're dealing with in this case.
Yeah, I
and
bet.
What is that called?
The western conifer seed bug.
Okay.
And so just, you shouldn't have tons of them.
Yeah, you should.
No, I don't. It's just once in a great while.
Yeah.
I'll, you know, see one or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so usually I don't see large numbers of these again, one here, one there. So they're generally not a big concern the way that the Asian lady beetles will invade by the thousands.
Yep, there we go.
Okay,
thank you. Yeah, thanks, Arlene. And John in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, John.
Hey, I work in a restaurant kitchen, and we're getting killed with fruit flies every summer. I was wondering if you could give me any suggestions on that. It's a pretty clean kitchen, by the way.
Sure.
Can't figure out where they're coming from.
Okay. Well, in a kitchen-type environment, there's lots of nooks and crannies that they could potentially breed in. There also are problems sometimes with restaurants where the kitchen might be okay, but if you are attached to a bar area, the taps from beer and things like that or spilled beer, that can be a source of these. Even a beer bottle or two left under the bar somewhere or tucked along a wall, someone missed, that can be a source for lots of fruit flies. There's even cases where the source is actually outside in the dumpster, and the flies just happen to be flying back into the kitchen.
Oh, that's not it. That's definitely not it.
Okay.
I didn't know fruit flies could come off of beer.
Oh, yeah. Another name for a common fruit fly, sometimes they're called vinegar flies. So they're very strongly attracted to the scents of alcohol, beer and wine and things like that. I've heard of problems where hoses from soda machines, where you got 10 different sodas all coming out of the same dispenser, you get buildup of stuff in there, spilled food and stuff that gets power washed under legs of cooking appliances and things like that. Any place, and it doesn't take a whole lot of damp organic material, but any place that builds up or grease traps, locations like that, that can lead to a pretty good number of fruit flies.
Even the pourers on a bottle of booze.
Like yeah.
I've never seen fruit flies like this in a restaurant.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of places where they can show up. That's for sure.
Yeah, often with restaurant type situation, because I've spoken with lots of pest control folks. In some cases, it can take them weeks and months to find the ultimate source. You go in, you visit the place, you look around. Everything is clean, and there's one overlooked location. And until you find that breeding source and clean it up, you continue to have occasional fruit flies here and there.
What about sewers?
Well, that can be a problem on occasion. There's certain fruit flies and other small flies that can be associated with sewers, especially if there is a break in the line going from the building out to the main sewer. What you could do if you find some of the flies, get them to either me or a pest control company you're working with, get them identified, because that can sometimes give us some clues on where the source may be, a food source versus a possible sewer source. So that can be a potential source as well.
Yep.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Terry in Milwaukee, thank you for calling.
Yes. I have a question about the botflies.
Okay.
We have pet rabbits.
And the last, we let them out, run around the backyard during the summer. In the last 2 years, they got struck by this bot fly. And we've had thousands of dollars worth of vet bills.
Mm-hmm.
We lost one 2 years ago because of the anesthesia coming out of it. And last year, we were able to save the one we had. He had three of them, you know. And I was wondering, is there anything that a person can do other than keep them in the house, in our back shed, which is screened? Is there anything you can do to...
Yeah, is there a material that you can put on the rabbits? Yeah, or
not that I can think of off the top of my head. My general suggestion would be to chat with your veterinarian, see if there is some type of treatment that can be applied to the animal directly. I just don't know for sure off the top of my head. Otherwise, the most bulletproof solution would be to keep the rabbits enclosed with a screen or indoor so that the flies physically can't get to them. I will say in general, the last year or two, I've had lots and lots of reports of bot flies going after rabbits and squirrels and small mammals. So they just seem to be doing very well at the moment in the state. Maybe it has to do with our weather patterns the last couple of years. But in terms of preventing that problem, again, the most reliable solution would be to keep them indoors or enclosed so that the female bot flies physically can't get to them.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And let's turn to Sylvain in Plainfield next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. The problem is actually in Lomira, so I don't know if it's local to a town or
okay.
Just general. I have what, according to the internet, called some pantry moth.
Yep.
You've heard of them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we...
How do I get rid of them? I cleared out my cupboards. I took up my flour and sugar and stuff in bags and bought new stuff. And I bought some of those pheromone sticky pad things, which are catching some of them. But they still... I catch about six a day.
Okay. Well, you've already taken some of the first steps we need to do. And with pantry moths, the commonest one we see is the Indian meal moth, although there are a few other species. So again, they can be associated with various food items, crackers, cookies, things along those lines, milled flour and things along those lines, but also other food materials. Sometimes we may overlook, and it can be just about anything plant-based. So dried herbs, bulk tea, things like that should be inspected.
Potpourri.
Sometimes folks have strings of dried peppers. One common place I regularly find them during the holidays, if you buy bulk nuts from the grocery store, those can have them in them. Cocoa, things like that. If you have pets in the house, check the pet food. Pet treats can be a source for these. Bulk bags of pet food, especially if it sits for a long time, can be a source for these. A few other places that they can pop up would be things like even rodent bait and bird seed. One of the things about rodent bait is designed to kill rodents. It's not an insecticide. So if you've had a rodent problem in the past and you've got old rodent bait in wall voids or tucked in the basement or attic, yeah. That can actually be a breeding source for these moths because the rodent bait is often a grain-based material. So you really have to kind of increase your bubble of where you're looking for potential food sources. But once we can find and clean up all the food sources, that should eliminate the problem.
And there's nothing in between I can do.
Generally, no. And these can be really frustrating cases. There are even situations if you're in a home that maybe had rodent problems, mice sometimes will take things like pet food and seeds and stash it in wall voids, which can be a long-term source. And that can be a really big headache because you sometimes can't get rid of the source.
Phil, I remember Phil Pelletieri telling me he finally found the source, and it was some seed packets from some old vegetable seeds from years back that he'd kind of forgotten about, and they were downstairs in the basement, and that's where they were, just in those little seed packets.
Yeah, so again, it can be just about any type of dried plant-based material could be a potential food source for these moths.
Yeah. So good luck with your search, Sylvain. Appreciate your call. And Chris in Burlington, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hello. I have a question. I was talking about praying mantises. I would like to plant like an insectary in the garden to attract predators. And is there a book or a website that you would suggest that would tell me what kind of plants would be good for habitat for insects?
Yeah, so probably my favorite book along these lines is by Whitney Cranshaw. It's Insects, Garden Insects of Eastern North America, I believe is the name of it. That one is a really good source. That book is going to talk about lots of pest insects, but it's got a good section in there on beneficial insects, too. So that can help you identify them. In terms of what to do to kind of increase your chances of having beneficial insects, I mentioned this a couple minutes back, but having more diversity in your garden will definitely help out both for attracting pollinators and predators. If you hop online on Google and start doing some searches, there's a number of good extension publications I've seen from various states that basically describe what steps you can take to help kind of diversify your garden and attract some of these beneficial insects to your own backyard.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much for calling. And Luria in Rosendale, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I've been a permitted wildlife rehabilitator for almost 30 years, and I've dealt with pod flies on wildlife, squirrels and bunnies. I've removed probably hundreds of them. You can do it yourself. There's no need to take them to the vet. They should never be anesthetized. That's not necessary. And they won't kill the animal unless they've got a lot of bot flies on them. You know, three or four isn't going to even hurt the animal.
How do you get rid of them then?
What?
How do you get rid of them then?
You can just, when the hole, they are a little larva that lives under the skin, and they have to breathe through a hole in the skin, and as they grow, the hole gets larger. And when the hole is large enough that you can see the larva in there, it'll be dark colored. You can just reach in with the tweezers and very gently pull it out.
Ah. So that's a way just to do it on your own.
Yeah, I have heard of that. One complication with botfly larvae is they've actually got little hooks on their body that make them hard to pull out sometimes, so it can be a little bit challenging. There are species of botflies down in the tropics that can impact humans, and if you say traveled to Belize or Costa Rica and came back with some of those, medical professionals will often cover up the site and kind of block up the breathing holes on it, and then the insect tries to kind of squeeze itself out. So there are a number of different ways to go about this, but it can be done. They can be removed.
Well, thank you very much, Luria, for calling. Appreciate your call. And PJ, it's always great to have you come by as well. And you are back on May 16th, and we'll do this all over again. And by the way, as you're listening in, if you have more questions, you want to send them a photo, go online to the Insect Diagnostic Lab. You can find the address if you want to mail something, or you can post a photo of close-up photos of some insects for identification as well. So, PJ, back on May 16th. Tomorrow at 11 o'clock, our legal expert will be back to talk about when you need a lawyer, how to choose one, and take a closer look at divorce as well. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store.